The details behind the Diddy indictment, Taylor Swift's stalkers, Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Was our friend Mary Kay Cabot at the Pro Football Hall of Fame Gold Jacket Dinner in Canton as Mary Kay received the Bill Nunn Memorial Award given to a media member for great lifetime service and work in the National Football League. And Mary Kay joins us right now on the Fan Hotline. Zinger, Mary Kay.
Yeah, you know, I debated on whether or not I wanted to tell that joke, but I ran it past my 24-year-old daughter, who does some stand-up comedy in New York City, and she said, "You have to tell that joke; it's gonna kill."
And it did.
It killed. Are you? I mean, you would have fit in great on the Tom Brady celebrity roast.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
That would have been perfect there. Perfect.
Yeah, so, I'm actually happy that I did it. It was all in good fun. It was just a little joke.
Yep.
It was just to, you know, lighten the mood, have a little fun on that very special night for everyone. And if you hear the whole entire speech in the context of the speech, you understand kind of where I'm going with all of that.
Well, it was fun. You got a lot of headlines around the country for it. It wasn't your intention, I know. But, for instance, the New York Post Browns reporter takes savage shot. So well done. I heard it and I laughed. And, I was covering the Browns at the same time with you at that time. And we know how Bill was his first time around. So that was really well done. And congratulations to you. It's a wonderful award. You and Chuck Heaton, the only members of the Plain Dealer staff to ever win that award. And Chuck was an outstanding Browns beat reporter for decades. And congratulations. It's a real nice honor.
And by the way, I also honor you by actually writing your own material there and not having it aggregated 1,000 times over, or was aggregated 1,000 times over. It's amazing to see how quotes come up in different stories because somebody read somebody's story. And so we just appreciate you. We appreciate all your original journalism that you're able to put out there.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. And as I have come to find out, at first, you know, I responded to the New York Post post by saying, you know, it wasn't a savage shot. It was
right.
it was just a joke. Well, the younger generation, my kids and some of the writers yesterday were saying, no, you're not getting it. Savage is a good thing. Savage is awesome. That was a compliment. So, you know, we're still learning to keep up with all the times here, but. But yeah, I was happy that turned out the way that it did. The night was magical and wonderful. My whole family was in town. It was great, great fun and such a tremendous, tremendous honor. The message that I really kind of wanted to deliver and that I was trying to deliver, and the Belichick joke was part of it, was the fact that, you know, I really did have to kick open that door and try to make sure that I could yank all the amazing, amazing women that have come after me through that door and also keep it open when the going got tough. Like, don't give up. Don't let them break you. Don't let them get you down. Keep going. Stay in the game. That was the message that I wanted to get across, and I hope it came through like that.
Well, congratulations. You've done fine work. You continue to do it, and we're really happy for you and your honor. I have another zinger. You ready?
Sure.
The Cleveland Browns have 6 quarterbacks on their roster.
Well, when I go ahead and retweet my story today, I was going to say, you know the old saying, if you have 5 quarterbacks, you don't have one. So, now, of course, technically it is 6, but Deshaun Watson is not part of this quarterback competition right now.
Right.
So they do have 5 that are legitimately a part of it. But yeah, that is true. So here comes Tyler Huntley. And I knew that something was going to have to happen yesterday when I was talking to Kevin Stefanski. I even asked him, did you have this on your bingo card that all these quarterbacks were going to get hurt? And we were talking about it on the podcast. Like, who is going to play in this football game? They need somebody to get through this preseason game. You don't want to be playing Joe Flacco if you can avoid playing him at all. You might not want to start Shador and have him play a whole entire game. I think that would be a tall order for him. So they were going to have to do something, and lo and behold, Tyler will be on his way.
Mary Kay, do you think there's any chance that Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel are able to participate in any way, shape, or form, either in the practice or the game on Friday?
Well, they might do some of the practice if they can, you know, if they can just keep it to seven on sevens and not really tweak those hamstrings any more than they already have. But in terms of them getting out there and playing in a game when they can't move all that well, I don't think that would be wise. I think the Browns will lean heavily against that. If anything, right now, maybe they would press Joe Flacco into service for a little bit and then go to Tyler and Shador. Not exactly sure how they're going to work it all out. They are still going to have meetings and figure that out all themselves. And by Thursday, they'll have a plan for that. But I just don't think it would be wise, really, at this point to play Kenny or Dylan with those hammies.
Yeah, would you be surprised if Shador starts and then Tyler comes in second half? That they split the game in half for the, like, I wouldn't be shocked if they decide to start Shador. I think the headlines will be bigger than what it really is, but I would not be surprised if they do that. Would you be surprised?
Well, as I wrote in my story last night, if they do decide to do something like that, you know, those will be some of the first snaps that he takes with the first team offense, providing he takes any in the practice. So, I mean, if they want to roll him out there in the practice and try to get him some time with and against first teamers, then maybe they can start him. But they have been so careful about bringing him along slowly and judiciously. And I just think that, you know, it might be a lot to throw him in there against the Panthers starters to start this game. So we'll see what they come up with. I personally would lean towards not doing that, just because you would want him to have a good first experience in his first NFL game. And I think it would probably be, in my opinion, better to, you know, to have him go against backups for the first time.
Gotcha. Mary Kay, I mean, he has gone up against the Browns' number one defense in practice, right? I mean, I've heard that he has. And in some ways, isn't that a first team rep? It doesn't matter who you have on offense. If you're going up against the first team defense, then you're getting, I just think there, in some way, shape, or form, I think this story is just way overblown. But isn't that, I mean, if you're going up against a first team defense, you're going, that's a first team rep.
Okay. Well, first of all, he attempted three passes. That was one drill.
Okay.
That was one little period where I think there were a couple of runs, and then he attempted three passes and he went 2 for 3. Working with the second team offense against the first team defense. So this was not a lot of work against the first team defense.
Okay.
And of course, in a game, in a preseason game like this, you can get hit. You can get sacked. And if you are not 100% ready for that opportunity, then it just might not be the right thing to do. They might do it. They might decide to do it. I don't know what their thinking is on that yet. But there are all kinds of things that they would have to consider in that space. And that's one of them, because one of the things that he is still learning how to do, and he's getting much, much better at it, is not retreating when the heat is on. And he's getting, again, I've seen so much progress in him in that regard, but again, mostly against the second team. So I don't think it's overblown. I do think that they are doing this the right way with him and making sure that he is successful as he comes up the learning curve. And they're flying in the face of what everybody wants them to do, but they have stuck to their guns, and they're not succumbing to media pressure and public pressure and fan pressure. They're not doing that. They're doing what's right for Shador, and people have to understand that. They're doing what's right for the football team and for Shador, because by the time he gets out there, and maybe it will be Friday night, by the time he gets out there in a first team starting type situation, then he will be way, way more ready for it than he would have been.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us from the Plain Dealer in Cleveland.com. In your story, you said Tyler Huntley will play on Friday. Any chance that he plays ahead of Shador so that they slot Shador against backups, Mary Kay, to do what you just said, try to accentuate his opportunity to succeed first time out?
Well, once again, depending on what they decide to do with Joe Flacco and whoever else is available, I would lean towards having Shador set up for success. Can we put it that way?
Yeah,
sure.
I would lean towards having Shador set up to have a successful evening, a successful debut, so that he has something to build on and that he can feel good about himself after this football game. So I personally would probably rather see him a little later in the ball game than against the Carolina Panthers ones, because you don't know which of those guys are trying to win a starting job or are trying to just make the football team and what their plans are going to be. Some defenses are very, very aggressive in these first preseason games. So, once again, I don't know what the Browns are thinking. I do not know what they're thinking yet, and I don't think they have finalized it themselves. But I think I can't emphasize enough that the way they have handled Shador it's just been very, very professional. He's handled it extremely well, and I think in the long run, it's what's best for him and everyone.
Let's talk about the defense, because we've spent every waking moment talking about the offense. Let's talk about the defense here for a second. I would expect Miles not to play on Friday, but anybody else you think that maybe won't play?
I wouldn't play Denzel. I wouldn't play Miles. I mean, those guys have earned the right not to play in a first preseason game. I probably wouldn't play those guys. If anything, maybe I'd play them in the third preseason game for a little bit, except for Miles. Denzel, I would leave it up to him if he wanted to play or not. Again, he's earned that right to decide what he wants to do because of who he is and where he is on this football team. So I don't know what the plan is, but I think that they were originally intending to sort of ramp up towards the quote-unquote dress rehearsal game August 23rd here. But Kevin has been very, very mum on his plan so far.
Safe travels to Charlotte and Mary Kay. Congratulations again on your Hall of Fame weekend.
Congratulations, Hall of Fame honor. Mary Kay.
Well deserved.
Thank you guys so much. Take care.
Mary Kay Cabot joining us on the Fan Hotline as she's on her way to Carolina to cover the Browns practice tomorrow against the Panthers and then the game coming up on Friday.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
There was a time when Michael Lombardi was a regular on our show.
He was.
Remember?
Yes. Oh, I remember.
Yeah, Michael
well.
Would. Michael was
once
with
a week.
Once a week, every Tuesday during the NFL season.
Every Tuesday, he would torch the Browns. That's what the segment should have been called. Torch the Browns.
Torching the Browns?
Yes.
Well, Michael's had a really interesting career. He was with the Browns in the 80s and worked his way up from scout to personnel director to director of player personnel and then was with the Eagles and the Raiders and Broncos, came back to the Browns as GM and vice president, then to the Patriots, and now he's the general manager at the University of North Carolina. And you're right, Andy, that sounds weird.
It is weird, isn't it?
There's some guys, some big-time guys, though, who have these jobs in college now. Michael has one at North Carolina. Andrew Luck is the general manager at Stanford, his alma mater. That's big. That's big deal.
Just announced Dame Lillard is now the GM at Weber State.
Mm. Is he?
Yeah.
How about that? Well, he's got time on his hands this year as he heals up.
Sadly, yes.
Yes, but that's unfortunate.
A lot of fun things to do in Ogden.
Yes. Well, Michael was on the morning show today talking with the morning guys. And obviously, you know, his main focus these days is North Carolina football. But it's not his entire focus, Daniel.
Yeah, he had a couple of thoughts about the training camp battle that was taking place in Cleveland, and the guys in the morning did a really nice job making sure, you know, hey, let's make sure you get your thoughts out there about how all of this is going. And let me tell you, as Michael Lombardi is known to do, he did not hold back when it came to the quarterback competition.
Football's a mathematical problem, and no one understands this. There's only so many reps every day at practice, and how you divide those reps is most critical in terms of how you're building your team. Because if you're giving 20 reps a day to a guy who's not going to ever play for you, you're wasting 20 reps. And once you determine what value you have in the player, who do you need to develop? Who don't you need to develop? It's impossible to develop two young quarterbacks at the same time. It's not college. We don't have 400 players on the field like they used to in college, where you could take everybody and move them to a side field and then go over. So to me, it's a very challenge. When you draft a guy in the third and then you come back and pick a guy in the fifth, it becomes very difficult. Look, Al Davis picked a quarterback in the first round from Tennessee State, and in the second round he picked Kenny Stabler. I wrote about it in Football Done Right. Now, how did he do that? That was a different time and period in the NFL, but I think it's really challenging today based on the rules and based on how much time you can be on the practice field. After you're up there, 2:45, that horn blows, and if you're not off the field, the Players Association is going to call you up.
That's absolutely factual information.
Football Done Right, by the way, is his new book that's out, or his book that's out.
Cool.
Yeah.
I hope he signs a copy and sends it to us.
Oh, well, you should beg him. Send him an email.
Beg him? I'll beg him.
Here, you want to text him?
Michael's right. And the one thing about that that people might not get, it's a different time in the NFL, and things are so regimented by the Players Association that you can only do so much. You can only practice so many days in pads. You can only practice for so long, blah, 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 blah. As opposed to days gone by when you could just, you know, work the bejeebers out of these guys.
Right.
You can't do that anymore. And that makes it a really interesting situation as the Browns try and get reps for these guys. And you know, as we've heard too many times, people screaming that Shadur is not getting the same type of reps as everybody else. And Dylan Gabriel might not be getting the same reps as Kenny Pickett was and everything else. Well, Michael just laid it out. If you don't think that guy's going to be playing for you, you're wasting those reps.
Yeah.
And that's what I think people need to grasp. And that's why I would assume the two veterans, when they're both healthy, Flacco and Pickett, are getting the most of the reps.
How about the fact that he said that you can't get two rookies ready at the same time?
I would agree with that.
I don't disagree with that at all. I that's why this whole thing's a conundrum. I don't want to step on the next couple cuts because I did hear some of this other stuff. But, you know, he did talk about.
Listen.
I'm sorry. But he also talked a little bit about, you know, what a draft class actually is and the way you should perceive it. I don't know if we have that or not. But if he doesn't, I'll tell you what he said.
Well, why not? Let's go there now.
All right.
What people don't understand about the NFL draft is it's always for your next year's team. It's never for the current team. Certainly, you'll get some production out of a draft pick during the current year, but really what you're building on is for the 26 team. He's not the 25 team. Could he go in and play? Perhaps. Would he be effective? Probably not fair to the kids. So I think ultimately every draft class is for the next year's team. You should be evaluating the 24 draft class for the Browns this year. How's that going to line up in terms of impacting their team and getting them over the top? That's really the fundamental question. As for the Shadur Sanders media circus, I mean, look, that's created by the worldwide leader. No one loves to talk about one thing more than they do. And so that really, it's not the kids' fault that they do it all the time.
The only problem I had with what he said there was, I think the standard that he talks about making draft picks for the next season makes sense if your team is a winner. The problem for the Browns is when you're coming off a 3-win season, you need to pick for now. Think about it. You could have up to probably 5 rookies starting at any point during this season. Fannin could start at tight end if you need him to. Dylan Sampson's got the opportunity to start at running back. Quinshon Judkins, what happens, but Mason Graham and Carson Schwessinger. So, I mean, all of those guys could start, and you could have all those guys starting at one point during the season in the same game. So it's like, I understand what Michael's saying, but I also think that applies to teams that win.
I can't disagree with that. One thought that I have about what Michael said there and Sanders and Gabriel. If you're giving Dylan Gabriel up until his hamstring thing more reps, I've kind of always thought since this all started that Sanders is a long-term investment by the Browns and that maybe they're just trying to get Dylan Gabriel up to speed as a third-round pick and see if he can actually be the backup quarterback. Do you know what I mean? Can he be the backup this year to Flacco or Pickett, whoever's the starter? And if they think he can be, then maybe you move on from one of the veterans. If you don't think he can be the backup quarterback, you got to keep both veterans, and maybe you get rid of Dylan Gabriel. And you keep Sanders as the third guy that you hope to develop and see where he goes. It almost, the way it's been handled, Andy, almost makes me feel when it comes to security and, you know, being a part of this organization longer term,
mm-hmm.
Almost makes me feel that Sanders could be in that position more than Gabriel despite the fact that he was drafted two rounds later, because they're not rushing him and they're giving him every chance to slow play his development. And Mary Kay just hammered on that too when we just talked to her.
It's about putting him in the right position to win. I agree with that. Especially for Sanders. I wonder, okay, so let's just say everybody says Gabriel looks horrible right now. Let's go on that premise that people are saying that, well, maybe he doesn't look good because there's a transition period going on, and they may be, if you're right, Jeff, and they're trying to gear him up to be the backup quarterback, then, you know, they're throwing a semester's worth of work at him in 2-3 days.
He's being asked to do a lot more than Shedeur Sanders is in practice until his hamstring. That could lend itself to not being as successful.
Sure.
Right now.
I still see it, and I've always kind of seen this. It's one of the veterans and both of the rookies on the roster. That's what I've seen. One of the veterans, both of the rookies, if that's the way they're going to play it. It's risky. I think it's a little risky.
I do, too.
But you might be able to pull in a free agent at any point, too. So.
Except if Dylan Gabriel shows that he's competent and could be your backup quarterback. Then it's not as risky. And maybe that's what they're trying to find out.
If that was the case based on what we've heard over the last couple of weeks, do you think that holds true today?
Let me find out how severe his hamstring is.
I don't think it has anything to do with the hamstring. It's if they had to start the season tomorrow and they had to either pick Pickett or Flacco.
One of those guys and the other's the backup.
Yeah. One of the veterans is the backup.
Yeah.
Not one of the rookies. So then one of the rookies.
Right now you're keeping both vets.
And now you're probably trying to slide one of the other rookies onto the practice squad if you can.
Well, Michael Lombardi also hammered home another point that I think a lot of us have forgotten over this journey. Rookies are bad. And usually rookie quarterbacks, about the same way.
It would be hard to put the kid in a position where he could be successful. Look, the quarterback position, and you're the head coach of the team, you got to be able to stand in front of the team and say, this player gives us the best chance to win the game. And I think it's really hard to do on rookie quarterbacks. You know, now sometimes you're forced to do it. Pittsburgh was forced to do it when Tommy Maddox got hurt and all of a sudden Ben Roethlisberger had to go play. So that's a different element. But I think it's really challenging for some rookie to come in and say, look at Caleb Williams. I mean, last year he was talked about as the greatest savior to the franchise. How many games did he win for the Bears? How many mistakes did he make that hurt his team? Look, Jaden Daniels did a tremendous job for their team, but that's a few and far between. I think it would be unfair to any young quarterback to put him into the fire, especially if you're not going to build your team around, look, we're going to win with defense, we're going to win with kicking game, we're going to run the ball, and we're going to limit the quarterback. That's hard to do in the NFL.
I like listening to Michael speak.
I do too.
He you know, say what you want about Michael. I know a lot of folks in Cleveland aren't crazy about him because they weren't happy with the way things went in any of his 10 years here, but he knows his stuff, and I think those are some really on the money comments.
What do you think it was like when they walked in that locker room and told them Todd Philcox is going to start?
Well, that was not the best of moves. Vinny Testaverde was hurt at the time.
Right.
It would have been Vinny, but you cut Bernie, and then all of a sudden there's Todd Philcox playing in Seattle.
Maybe that's something he learned along the way.
Maybe.
You're just talking about walking in front of that locker room, telling them that you've got somebody that maybe the front office doesn't totally trust to start. It's funny because as I listened to him say that, I was like, huh. Remember when you were here the first time and you guys decided Bernie had nothing left and that Todd Philcox was a better choice down the road? They knew they left themselves in the position.
Vinny was the guy.
But that could happen
Vinny was hurt.
Yeah, but they left themselves in that position when they decided they were going to let Bernie go. I can't believe I'm having an article or an argument about this. It's too late.
You're not.
No, I know we're not arguing. Just the fact that that stuff burns in my mind about Bernie's exit still bothers me.
But I think, and not to be the guy who runs around dumping cold water on top of everything, the thing that I take away from Michael Lombardi, and especially in that cut, is the reminder that rookies are not good.
Yeah.
And especially in the early part of seasons, rookies are not good.
So how does that make you feel when I say you could have up to 5 on the field to start a game this year?
It makes you look at the over-under for this team and realize which direction is going to go. This is a developing team.
One thing, though, if I can throw this out. The one position where I think you eliminate the rookie status is running back. Running backs, as rookies, tend to perform really well because you get the ball, you see the hole, you go.
Jeff, your middle linebacker is essentially captain. He hasn't played one NFL game, and they put the green dot on his helmet. Yeah, I mean, that's
sorry, Andy, to cut you
sorry. Go ahead. That's right.
I'd love to see the numbers of rookie running backs from weeks like 1 to 4. And just because of the adjustment period that comes with going from college football, where, I mean, you're legitimately running, you know, as Moses parted the seas in the middle of the offensive line.
Oh, you mean the LeBron offense?
Pretty much. I mean, that's what you're running through. I mean, we watched it for years, you know, Wisconsin running backs forever. Those lines were, I mean, we could hit the hole at a Wisconsin line. And in the NFL, it's
although
a
Ron Dane
now.
Was pretty good. Let's not sell
it. Oh, I'm not trashing anybody. You know, Jonathan Taylor has been unbelievable since he's hit the NFL with the Colts.
Yeah.
But like, some of those holes were gargantuan. In the NFL, that's a crease. So I wonder if like weeks 1 through 4 on a rookie running back, what that looks like. Again, just one of those side quests that we could go on at some point.
Paul Hoynes covers the Guardians for the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Hoynes is joining us in about 25 minutes right here on Baskin and Phelps. Up next, the NCAA has made a decision. I won't say insert your own joke here, but you'll like what it is coming up next.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Andy Baskin. I'm Jeff Phelps. This is Baskin and Phelps. Coming up at noon, Paul Hoynes is going to join us. From the Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Talk a little Guardians. Nice win last night. And then at 1 o'clock, there are six of them now. Six quarterbacks on the Browns roster. It's a lot to keep track of. We're here to help. We're going to play the new game show that's sweeping Northeast Ohio. Get to know your Cleveland Browns quarterbacks. That's at 1 o'clock. No prizes involved.
Do you have music or anything that goes along with it?
I don't know.
Is there a showcase showdown at the end?
I hope so.
I don't think so.
You don't think there is?
No, probably
what's,
not.
What's behind door number three?
Air. That's what you win, air.
Tell me, Carol Merrill.
Man.
It's a reference.
I
got to know.
Hang on, I'll tell you.
Carol Merrill? She was the gal on Let's Make a Deal who Monty Hall would always say, you know, what's behind door number two, Carol Merrill? And Jay Stewart was his announcer. And yes, I spent way too much time sitting in front
Jeff,
of a television.
I want to congratulate you on making a reference for someone who is still alive.
Thank you.
84 years old.
I can't help it if I know worthless stuff.
I'm just happy you found someone who's still with us. These usually turn into somebody who would have been 138.
It is true.
I'm sure Jay Stewart's gone. He was the announcer. Looks a lot like Roy Clark. There's another bad reference for you. The NCAA has made a big decision, boys. Guess what?
Monty Hall would have been 104 this year.
Do you love the NCAA basketball tournament?
And I love
it. You want more?
Yeah.
You're not getting it yet.
I don't want more.
They're staying at 68 teams in the NCAA tournament for this coming season. Format's not changing. Men
no
or women.
Greed? No more greed? We couldn't get everybody
let's
in?
Not, come on.
For a year.
Okay. Come on. Right. Of course there's greed. Staying at 68 teams. But there are discussions about possibly expanding to 72 or 76 ahead of the 2027 NCAA championships.
Got to make some money.
Well, what do you guys think? I personally thought 64 was perfect. Everybody's in, you play, you go. Not everybody, but I mean, that's an option. You had your 64 teams and you went. You know, that's it. I mean, 10th seeds aren't winning the NCAA championship. So most of the teams that were in there who you thought had a chance were in the tournament. Okay, very, very few teams who you thought could win the whole thing weren't ever in the tournament. And that's still the case. I don't know that you needed to add four more to go to 68, but that's where they are now, and so that's fine. Would you like to see every team eligible?
Every team is technically eligible when the season starts.
Actually in the tournament.
Would I like to see every team in the tournament?
Every team is involved. No. And that would mean, you know, that would mean now some teams could get a bye. You know, you could put teams in, you know, the big conferences or go with rankings and give a bunch of teams a bye actually right into the tournament. I think this might be fun. You know, give the top, I don't know, computer ranked 40 teams, you're in, whatever. I don't know. I'm spitballing here. And then every other Division I school plays it down, and you can win your way into the field. Would that work?
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why have conference tournaments then?
I don't know why you should. I think they're stupid. They're there to make money and nothing else. I mean, that's what the MAC tournament is for, nothing but to make money. And I love
the MAC. The MAC tournament is the reason why you should have a tournament, so that you know that at least you got your one team, and they're going to be hot going into the tournament.
Or you could say our number one team all season long clearly got knocked out in the second round. What good does that do you?
Jeff, the beauty of your vision of the NCAA basketball tournament and mine are totally different. The beauty of the NCAA basketball tournament is that any five guys from any Division I school in the country have the opportunity to win. That opportunity alone, whether they do it or not, makes the NCAA men's basketball and women's basketball tournaments compelling. I want to talk about schools that we never talk about. The SEC had 14 teams last year in the tournament.
Yeah, I know.
It's 11. I think what's crazy is
it's preposterous.
I watch the Mid-American Conference tournament every year. They're always, and what happens is sometimes you get a MAC team that probably should be in, but isn't in, but the 14th best team from the SEC team is in.
Well, it's
and by the way,
that's
not,
exactly my point, Andy.
I can't stand that. Like, 14 teams in from one conference is ridiculous.
If Toledo runs the table in the MAC and then gets knocked out in the second round of the MAC tournament, well, that's too bad. Many conference tournaments, especially the ones that result in just one team, you know, which unfortunately is the Mid-American Conference in most recent years, is to me, that's a shame. Would you like to see every Division I team actually involved in some kind of a tournament that would lead to the NCAA tournament? I mean, it's been done in other things. I mean, it's possible.
Yeah, I had an epiphany just now. Tell me if you like this idea.
I mean,
because and if they do expand again, we're asking ourselves, what does the Big Ten Conference Championship mean now? It doesn't mean anything
in basketball or football.
In basketball,
okay.
In basketball, I mean, you're talking about, was the seventh, eighth, ninth team going to make it in? What if? Let me just say this. Let's say they do go. They wanted to get more teams in, or they could put everybody in. What if you played the conference tournament to start the season? And it might have some meaning there earlier in the year. Then you play out the regular season, which, by the way, is much harder than winning a tournament.
Well, what point?
And would that not give more value to winning a regular season championship?
What point would the conference tournament really do, though?
It's a preview, and then you get all kinds of. It gives you the opportunity to build up the regular season, to build up what you have. Because right now, it's like no one really cares about college basketball during the regular season. All anyone cares about there is maybe now, if you put the tournament at the beginning of the year, play that there. Now you got a chance. Now you got teams going head to head in the beginning of the season. People might be a little bit more interested. Still, you're going up against the NFL. That's kind of a problem. But you're there, and you can build a little energy towards the regular season. And then, and Jeff, I think you would be all in favor of this. Then you would make the regular season actually mean something. It's way harder to win a regular season title than it is to win a short tournament at the end of the year.
Which is my point.
And why not give value to the regular season, especially in the Mid-American Conference, right? I mean, those guys beat each other up every night. Every game, those guys are beating each other up. And then you figure out what you want to do at the end. Because if you're going to put everybody in, maybe the conference tournament would be more valuable at the beginning of the season than at the end of the season. Just an epiphany, that's all.
It would be tough to throw all of them in there because there's 361 Division I basketball programs, men's basketball programs. So like going, all right, everybody in the pool would really be a mess. And that's before we even get to the fact that 361 is an odd number.
But they kind of already are all in now, right? So if you win your tournament, now you're in.
Yeah. Everyone has a chance, which is what makes this thing as fun as it can be. The question that I've always had when it's come to the basketball tournament for both the men's and the women's is it's one and done. It's what makes it awesome. Yeah. It what makes it want to come, you know, make you want to watch this. But does it truly tell you who the best team is in college basketball?
No, it tells you who won a tournament.
Exactly.
Yeah. Who the best team at the end of the season is, though.
I don't think it does that either, Andy. It's who won a game. I mean, who won a game? There's a reason that the NHL and the NBA play a series. Major League Baseball plays a series. They want to find out who actually is the best team.
Yeah, but now we're finding out it doesn't really matter, right? With Major League Baseball, if you're a wild card team, you got a chance.
But you still have to win a series.
Yeah, but like we've sat here before and you've said, well, you know, the baseball playoffs don't really mean. I mean, the harder thing is to win the regular season, right?
Without question.
Okay, but so that, and so you're also saying the World Series champion may not necessarily be the best
team.
That
is correct. Yeah, that's correct.
They're the best team, the hottest team at the end of the season if you're going to win.
That's it.
And the goal is to be the last team standing. So therefore, in my world, that makes you the best team that year. Because people aren't going to go back in history and go, oh, who won the President's Cup? They might in the NHL because they actually give out a cup for it. But who was it with the best regular season record? Like the only time I ever remember that is Golden State because the Cavs beat them in the end.
The Mariners. Mariners?
The one that the Indians beat. The Indians knocked out.
Yeah.
With 111
win. Win 116. Something like 116, that.
Yeah. 111, I think it was the 0-1 Mariners. Correct me if I'm wrong on X because I'm on top of my head.
It might be 0-1. But again, it's like, okay, so what's the goal here? What's the goal? I don't have a problem.
Well, if you're the NCAA, you know, it's a great event. It's just, do you want to keep tinkering? Will it make it a better event? Or do you tinker too much and turn it into a lousy event? I don't know.
Well, and we'll go off of something you two gentlemen know quite well, which is television ratings. The first 2 days of the NCAA tournament
huge.
Well, now the new first 2 days, the ones, the Dayton games.
Oh.
And it's nothing against Dayton when I say these things. Dayton does a wonderful job with these games. But those games don't get the massive ratings that you would expect. It's not raising ratings bonanza.
Right, because people don't consider it the NCAA tournament.
Correct. What are the play-in games, I think they call them?
Yes. Yeah, play-in games.
Those play-in games don't. Now, the first 2 days of the tournament that we're talking about, that Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I mean, gosh, that's one of the best weekends in sports. I mean, it's just wall-to-wall basketball anytime you flip on the TV from noon to midnight. It's as good as it gets. Heck, even down to 2 a.m. So,
well, let's just say you went to 128 teams and you add another weekend onto the front end.
So why would you take the worst part of the tournament and try to get more of the worst part?
Because
money.
TV ratings.
But even if they're...
Even bad TV ratings means TV revenue.
And you know who would love that?
Somebody would pay... Your worldwide leader would pay big money for extra games.
It's all about content. Yep. And the betting sites would absolutely love it.
Oh, they'd go
it.
Bananas.
They would love it. That's at 128.
I can't live in this life where I'm looking around going, okay, let's make sure the gambling companies are covered because I know the gambling companies are going to be covered no matter what. We could put tiddlywinks on
TV. They're not covered.
And it would cover the gambling companies.
I don't know. Is the NCAA partnered with any of them yet? I don't even know.
First shot of the second half is an air ball. Oh, wait a minute.
Oh, you're right.
Don't.
Too soon?
Just don't even do it. I'm still bummed.
Your odds, though, be triple, quadruple of that happening, though. More teams in. But... I don't know. Are you changing the number of games in the regular season, the maximum games you're allowed to play? That's another question.
We're in a situation right now where something is as close to perfect as you're going to get it while still maintaining the model, right?
I think this
is as good as it gets.
I think the play-in games have detracted from it.
I agree completely. But that, you know, it's like the extra playoff teams in baseball.
Yeah.
That genie's out of the bottle.
Yeah.
You are not getting that back in.
Yeah, I doubt they're reeling
it back.
You'll
never see those go away.
Yeah, I would agree.
It would have to take some kind of god to step in and go, you know, the god of sports would have to walk in and go, no more wild card and throw that back in. But that'll never exist.
How about this? Would you go 128 teams? One extra round, maybe on campus sites? And then you get to the NCAA tournament. That would give 64 more teams, or in this case, 60 more teams, a chance to play for the NCAA tournament. I mean, there are things they could possibly do to... I mean, it would only take one night. Can you imagine the bonanza or one weekend? You know, you schedule one weekend open... And all of a sudden, there are 64 games, and the winners all go to the NCAA tournament, something like that. But that takes away the selection show, and it minimizes conference tournaments and everything. So
let me ask you this: do they make more money on a selection show, or do they make more money by having?
More games.
I don't think I wouldn't be at campus sites. I'd still be at neutral sites because you still got to bid on the neutral sites. And there's more money to be made if they move those games to neutral sites, I would believe, than at a campus site. I could be wrong.
And you could still, you
I could be wrong.
You could play eight games a weekend, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just one win and you're in type of thing. Except you'd end up with really bad mismatches.
Would you rather see 128 really teams? Bad. Would you rather see 128 teams play in the NCAA tournament and eliminate the conference tournaments? The conference doesn't want that.
No, they don't want because the conference makes money.
Yeah.
Yep. All about the money. Paul Hoynes isn't all about the money. He's about the baseball. Covers the G's for the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. He's coming up next right here on Baskin and Phelps. And at 1 o'clock, you're involved. Get to know your Cleveland Browns quarterbacks. Call in. I'll ask you questions. We'll see what you know about the six Cleveland Browns quarterbacks on Baskin and Phelps.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.